Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And we're back. We're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today we're talking with Nancy Morris. She is the Communications and Member Relations Director for the Maine Health Management Coalition. And today we're going to be talking about high deductible health plans, the good, the bad, and the alternative. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, good. Welcome. Hey, you know, tell me a little bit about the Maine Health Management Coalition. What is that all about, and what does it do?
Well, the Maine Health Management Coalition has actually been around for almost 20 years, and the purpose of the Maine Health Management Coalition is to bring together the people who pay for care, provide care, and receive care so that we can make care in Maine more valuable.
So when you're talking about bring people together, it's a nonprofit, I assume.
It is a nonprofit.
That matches health plans with people. Is that correct?
Well, it's a little bit different than that. Is what we do is motivate providers to improve quality and then teach employers how to buy health care in a way that makes more sense so that they can get better value for their dollar.
So education, right?
A lot of education, okay. And motivation.
So we twist arms, we pitchforks. And
somewhat. We're not that blatant, but yes, we do set up, for instance, the Maine Health Management Coalition has been publishing for many years information about how well doctors and hospitals perform, so patients can use that information. And later on, I'm going to tell you about some work we're doing on developing a new plan, and we're publishing information about how well the health plans are doing and helping us build that plan.
Sure. Well, a lot has changed in the last few years, of course, with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. With different words, same thing.
Yep.
Bottom line is that employers out there certainly have needed the education. There's no question about it. You talk to any of the benefit companies out there. You talk to even the healthcare companies. It was interesting. Last month, I was up at the Maine HR convention, and that healthcare was a topic, one of the major topics. Recruiting was another huge topic, of course, finding great talent. But there's still confusion. There's still information that is missing in terms of what really has to happen, changes that have happened in the past, what has to happen in 2016. Does your organization work with companies to help with that?
Actually, we're undergoing a huge initiative right now, which really could be transformative for the whole country. The state of Maine was one of the first organizations to get what's called a State Innovation Model Award, and it's part of the Affordable Care Act. And what it's designed to do is to help test out in different parts of the country new ways of doing things that can result in better, more reasonably priced healthcare services. And we're lucky enough to be one of the places that is testing these new models. And our role in the Maine Health Management Coalition is to work on a new health plan that's in some ways very similar to what people are used to, but in many ways much different, because it's going to give patients a lot more information at the time of service. It's letting them know the efficacy and the cost of information, and then also working to drive out the administrative costs that really don't add anything to the value of healthcare. And so there's a lot of work that we're doing inside the Maine Health Management Coalition right now under this SIM grant that could really be transformative for the country.
So what's the timeline on that? What do you think this information will be available to the public?
Well, we've been working with all the health plans in the state of Maine, including Medicaid, and now it looks like Medicare has opened the door for them to be part of this program too. And we've been working with health plans all around the state to build one single health plan where all the rules are the same and all the administrative responsibilities are the same. And the reason why that's so important is, even under the Affordable Care Act, we sat down with the doctors in the health plans, all the medical directors, and we said, okay, here's the rules under the Affordable Health Care Plan. How are you going to administer it? Well, they were all looking at the same language, and I'm sure you're not going to be shocked to find that four out of the five did something different. And so it causes a lot of extra work in the doctor's office. It causes a lot of problems for patients, and it doesn't add anything to the value of healthcare. So we're working with all the health plans to develop a single way of delivering the benefits so that at some point in time, a doctor's office can say, I take all carriers, but I only take the value-based insurance design plan. And then that way, they know the rules will always be the same. And that's important because the average doctor's office spends $86,000 per year per doctor just on getting reimbursed. And a hospital spends 10% of their charges is just getting paid.
Yeah, there's no question that the red tape, the paperwork is immense. Certainly, we work with a lot of hospitals and doctors, and they will all tell you that, especially over the last few years, it's gotten worse, not better. There's no question it's gotten a lot worse. And so the streamlining of the Affordable Care Act has actually doubled the work. And that's not exactly as it was planned or designed, but that's the reality. And we like to talk about what's real, not necessarily what's theory in terms of it. All right, so let's talk a little bit about our topic today. Let's start with high deductible plans. Tell me, first of all, what's the value, what's the benefit to having a high deductible plan versus a low deductible plan?
Well, initially when they were first introduced, there were some people who were thinking that they'd were going to lead to long-term costs down the line, and others who were excited about having patients go out there shopping for healthcare services. There has been a recent report issued by Carnegie Mellon University, and their findings are that high deductible plans, even if it's offered as an option, reduces the healthcare costs for an employer by 5%, and after looking at patients in a high deductible plan over a 3-year period, they did not see any of the things that they were afraid were going to happen, that patients were going to have more expensive costs because they delayed getting services that were more preventive in nature or addressing their issue when it was small and minor.
So we're talking about plans that have maybe 5,000, 10,000 plus initial uptake. You know, certainly if you talk to a lot of employers, they like the savings on that, and it puts the hand of that initial money in the employee's hand, correct? Health savings accounts have become a big part of that, right?
Right.
So that they can deduct that amount. But there is some pushback in health savings account. What is the coalition's positions on health savings account having to do with high deductible plans?
Well, I think our conclusion is that we really need a hybrid plan. So there are some things that are great about the high deductible plan. And because we know that not all services are created equal, in other words, we have evidence that about 37% of our services have robust evidence behind their use, but the remainder does not. And so our thought is that we should remove the barriers to getting the services that we know have the strongest return on investment, and then put the high deductible in front of the services where there's the least amount of evidence that those services work. But I think it's also important that we tell patients and give patients that information about how robust the data is. There's also another set of services called preference-sensitive services, and that means there's more than one evidence-based way to tackle that particular problem. And oftentimes, patients don't know about those options. And if they don't know about their option, they can't pick an option that could be significantly more affordable, easier for them to abide by, et cetera. And so under our plan, we're trying to help patients understand, here's services that have high value and they're the only option you have. Here's services that are high value that have multiple ways of getting those services. And here are the services that have the least amount of evidence supporting their use. And here are the benefits and the harms of those services. The deductible will apply there, and you can decide if you want to spend your money. And we think because we want to deliver it, that information at the time of the service with the doctor, so right there, you like you would go to a restaurant, you would see almost like a menu of services with the prices. And so then you could talk to the doctor and say, okay, I'm thinking maybe I do want this, but I see that I'm going to have to pay this much out of my pocket to get it. Could I wait a little while, or, you know, what are the other alternatives? And I think right now patients don't have that information to work with their doctor with, and we're trying to provide that information through electronic medical records.
Well, there's certainly a discrepancy between, for example, the costs of tests. You know, you can get a CAT scan, for example, at almost anywhere, any hospital, any area. The cost of that CAT scan varies greatly from whether you're going from one medical center to another medical center, the time of day you're going to go, the weekend. It depends on what it is. Now, it's one thing if it's medically urgent, you know, you're in a major accident, you have a, you know, a major tragedy, something has to be done right away. But if it is elective in terms of the sense of you need it, but it's not urgent, then we really should know how to shop that and go out and do that.
I agree with you totally. And the Maine Health Management Coalition believes that one way we're going to lower healthcare costs is through health cost transparency. But I think if we don't recognize that quality can vary from provider to provider, and a person picks a low-value provider to administer that service, that's not really a good value at all. It could cost a penny, and they could potentially harm you. I think a lot of people don't know that in America today, we see two jumbo jets full of patients every 3 days killed in a hospital setting. So even if you got that at half of what you normally pay, you certainly don't want that outcome. And we're suggesting that we need to change away around the way we pay for services so that we pay for the outcome, not how many services you get, but the outcome of those services.
How receptive has the insurance companies, the medical providers, the just in general been to being forthright with some of this information, especially when it comes to the hospitals and everything like that? It is a challenge for them to know what everything really costs.
Well, in terms of cost, we are going to publish soon information of what we call the total cost of care. So if you went to your primary care doctor, what's the chances of you your overall costs of going to that doctor, meaning does he refer out, does he use low-cost providers, et cetera. So we are going to give people sort of a general idea of cost, but under this new plan, what we want to do is give patients real-time costs based on their health insurance coverage and how much they've met of their deductible, et cetera, already, so that they'll know, again, as they're receiving services, how much it's going to cost exactly.
Employees are facing more questions in terms of trying to make decisions. And it's a challenge, right? Because they've, in some cases, they've never had to worry about all this,
right?
I mean, it's always kind of been the employer gives you a plan. That's pretty much the plan. We've all gone through it. It's how it is. How are they getting educated other than, and I chuckle a little bit, you can go to the web and look up anything. Doesn't mean it's right. So how do they know where to go? How do they know how to get the right information? How do they know what's real, what's not real out there other than, you know, maybe your site, maybe other every information about
well,
that?
Well, I will say, generally speaking, it's difficult. But here in the state of Maine, we are luckier than most because the state legislature passed a law that requires all healthcare providers in the state of Maine to make available to patients who ask the list of their top procedures that they perform or the top services that they perform. So you can get a price list of the top 50. The problem with the price list is that's only for that provider. And a lot of times you don't get just the services of that provider. You might get physical therapy with it. You might get a prescription with it. And so it really requires a lot of work on patients' parts to put the whole thing together. And for some patients, I think that's very intimidating. And for other patients, they may feel like they're trying their best but still aren't successful because they don't know how to anticipate what could be coming next. So you, for instance, could go to the doctor for a colonoscopy. So you go to a specialist for the colonoscopy, but then they find a polyp and they send it off to a pathologist to take a look at it. Suddenly, there's a new bill that you never knew was coming, and you certainly can't shop around at that point. So I think I can see how employees can sometimes find it really difficult, because I think it is very difficult and it needs to be easier. It's easier in a lot of other countries around the world. So it isn't that we can't do it. It's we need to want to do it.
We're talking with Nancy Marsh. She is the Communications and Member Relations Director for the Maine Health Management Coalition. We're talking about high deductible health plans, the good, the bad, and the alternatives. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Nancy Morris from the Maine Health Management Coalition. We're talking about high deductible health plans, the good, the bad, and the alternative. Again, Nancy, thank you for being on the show. We've been talking about the first half about what high deductible plans are. We talked a little bit about health savings accounts. We talked about some new study results that are out there by Carnegie Mellon. And I want to, and we started really ending the segment there talking about employees, right? So some of the employees' responses to these high deductible plans have been, well, you know, do I adopt it? Do I not do it? Should we pick this plan over this plan? Is $5,000 enough? Is $3,000 enough? $10,000 enough? $50,000 enough? $10 million enough? I mean, it's very, very interesting, the differences. And I would say some of the selection choices have shrunk because there don't appear to be as many plans out there. Tell me what you're seeing and what the take is on all that.
Well, we actually just finished focus group studies with employees in Portland and Bangor, and we were testing out some ideas that we were having for new plan ideas. And in regards to the high deductible plan, we found that there were sort of five common responses to the high deductible health plan. One was that people felt like they were frontline soldiers in the war against high healthcare costs, and they were ill-equipped and had very little intelligence in which to win the war. They wanted to win the war, but they were having difficulty because they didn't have good information. They couldn't find the information even when they tried. Then I think there's another group of people who I call the avoiders, and those are people who are so petrified of encountering the situation I just talked about, is going in for one service and then being ordered several other services, that they just avoid any services at all. And that is what a lot of people are worried about could lead to higher costs later on down the line. Then I think there's another kind of response to the high deductible plan, and that is the patient who feels entitled. And I say that not because maybe they always feel entitled, but what we heard in the focus group studies is, after I've spent all this money on putting in the deductible, once I hit that, the sky's the limit. I'm getting anything I want. I'm going to go in and get services I probably don't need because I already spent it and I might need it next year, so I might as well go in and get it now. And so I think that kind of is not exactly what we were trying to do. I think there are also adapters, and the adapters are really, you know, they're trying to win. And so I met a woman the other day who told me a story of going into her eye doctor. The eye doctor ordered drops for her and said, you're lucky. I have a $25 coupon for that prescription for you. I'm going to give it to you. So she went to the pharmacy, and the bill for the eye drops was $2,000 minus the $25 coupon she had. And she said, I told the pharmacist, put it back on the shelf. I am not going to do this. And she said, I drove back to the doctor's office. I waited in the waiting room, and I said, you know, when she has a minute, I want to see her again. And she went to the doctor and said, look, I'm never using you again. You didn't know the price of that service. I went in there. I showed them. My bill was almost $2,000 for those drops. Is there another alternative? And guess what? There was another alternative, and it was about what the coupon was worth. So she went from a $2,000 bill to a $25 bill because she was very active. But that takes a lot of guts. And the lady who told me this story used to run a hospital. So I think that's not a common thing. I do think there are one group that really kind of likes these high deductible plans, and that are people. Those are people who rarely use services anyway, and they're still lucky. A lot of people tell me, "I was always healthy until I got on a high deductible plan, and then all of a sudden,
There's truth to that.
I broke my leg. I mean, none of these things ever happened to me until I was on a high deductible plan. So, but many people, you know, might say, "Okay, no, I really never use services, and that health savings account lets me buy the services that weren't covered before." And then I think what's interesting is there's one other group out there, and they're not covered by high deductible plans, and they are the concerned employees who are happy that they still have good, rich coverage, but are a little bit afraid that their company is not being fiscally responsible. And they have some right to do that, because even with high deductible plans, most employees haven't gotten a raise in almost a decade.
No, it's true. There's, compensation has been a big area of concern. Employers have been struggling the last 5 years, and there hasn't been a lot of margin, right? They haven't been able to raise prices. They haven't been able to make that switch to the marketplace. And employer costs are going up. There's no question about it. Insurance costs has gone up. This is one of the unfortunate downfalls of the Affordable Care Act. We talk to employers all the time. 90% say their health care has gone up, and that was not what was supposed to happen, right? It's supposed to have gone down. It's actually gone up. Higher deductibles, more cost to health care. It's a concern. It's an issue, and that's the reality of it. So when you're talking about all these employees, have any of them said, well, why can't I just keep my original plan?
Oh, sure. Most people don't embrace change well. So, yes, I think that's a common thing. But I think what's interesting is several years ago, the Maine Health Management Coalition worked with a coalition of other organizations in the state of Maine, and we put together a book club to read a book called The Healing of America. And The Healing of America was a story about a reporter who worked for the Washington Post. I probably think I have that name wrong. But anyway, he worked.
One of the papers.
And he was sent all around the world. And he, by going all around the world and bringing his family with him, he got to see healthcare systems all around the world. And he realized that maybe we have something to learn from those other healthcare systems. And so we conducted this book club. Believe it or not, we got 16,000 people to participate in the book club in the state of Maine. And what was interesting is I thought people would, you know, there would be a slice of people who would be very angry at the situation, and that other countries are able to provide better services at half the cost that we do with better results. But in fact, I never heard that once. But what I did hear is people say, I can help. Here's what I can do. And I think they were so relieved to find out that this isn't the best healthcare system in America, and that we can make it better, and it could be better, that they really want to pitch in and help. And I think based on what we're doing under our project, we are going to give them a good chance to really help and really help the doctors do a better job, help everybody in the system better align together to produce better health.
We're talking about high deductible health plans, the good, the bad, and the alternatives. Let's talk a little about Maine itself now, because we've talked a little about the national side of it, the Affordable Care Act. Let's talk about Maine laws and resources to help patients avoid high out-of-pocket expenses. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, again, I talked a little bit before about here in the state of Maine, there is a law that's in place now. If you go to your doctors, and you could ask for a price list of the 50 most common services, same with a hospital, any healthcare provider is subject to this law in the state of Maine. We also have something called the Maine Health Data Organization, which was set up by the legislature many years ago, and patients can go to the Maine Health Data Organization website and put in certain services and see what the range of costs are. And why that's helpful is if you know there's a range and that range could have a $5,000 spread or a $20,000 spread, you can use that to talk to your healthcare providers to say, hey, I know there are others in the state doing this. Could you potentially give it to me at that price?
Benefit brokers are concerned about, and I know I've talked to a number of them, the shrinking number of plans
right. That
has really occurred in not only Maine, but everywhere out there. Also, that the plans contain things that don't necessarily apply to all people, right? They don't.
Right.
I know we're going to talk a little bit about this new hybrid plan that the coalition is looking at, but what's the feeling from the coalition on that concern?
We understand that concern. We are a small employer ourselves. We see how, we get a choice of bad or really bad. And so we understand how it must be difficult for brokers. And in fact, we have a fair amount of brokers who are actively working with us to develop this new plan. And one of the brokers told me, and he actually even hosts the meetings that we have for the clinical care committee, and the brokers participate, which is great because they've come up with some great ideas on how to make things better. He said, I can't wait until we develop this plan because I'm going to bring every one of my customers in. I'm just going to keep filling up this conference room and tell them about this new way of doing things. I think here in America, we think it's all about having another option. Another option could be an idea. But what other countries do is that they standardize more, and the coverage is robust enough to be clinically nuanced for each patient. So the coverage is there for what a patient needs, but they streamline the operations, and that produces a significant amount of cost savings.
Do you think that there are, and we know there are elective choices that people make, right? That they have to do things because if they want to, right? Or it's suggested, let's put it that way. Should plans cover these type of areas?
Well, under the hybrid plan that we're working on, is we are covering the services that have the highest return in terms of outcomes or health for the patient, or in reducing more expensive services down the line at the most generous rate. For those services that have the least amount of evidence supporting their use, that's where we're going to put a high deductible and give patients, as they're receiving services, the information that they know, the evidence is not very robust. This is not a meta-analysis. This is one study that suggested this. So that they can start to understand that not all services are created equal, and that, just because it's been recommended to them, it might be because the doctor is interested, is trying to give the patient an alternative. They might not do it themselves, but they're trying, because they understand that the data is not that robust. I think another thing we don't do really well in the United States is have enough time with a doctor, or at least a doctor's team, to really figure out what the patient wants. And, because sometimes the patient, a lot of times when I call the doctor, it's not because I want treatment. I just want to know, am I going to live through this? If I need to come in because this could be something big, I'll come in. But if it's something that's going to dissipate in a week or two, I'm okay. And so I think right now we don't really give patients a chance to say, this is what I'm looking for. And if we changed up that conversation, I think we'd start to see patients who are happier, who are going to the doctors less because they're getting what they want, and doctors who are happier. I mean, that's another thing that we don't talk about and is not a problem just in Maine, but all over the country, which is we're losing doctors.
No question.
They are so frustrated by this system that they are leaving in droves. And it's interesting, this year we did a program for the state legislatures, you know, some people, they volunteered to participate, and we brought in experts to explain about how to know when evidence is robust or not. And they were very thankful for that program, but there were probably 15 participants, and three of them were doctors who had left the system, and they all said to me, if you fix the healthcare system, I'll come back in.
Now, there's no question the doctors are very frustrated from the reimbursement rates that continue to be cut either federally or by state or by, you know, insurance companies in general. And with the, as you said, the general administrative costs and the insurance costs and all that go into trying to get their reimbursements. It's crazy, the amount of money.
Well, quality improvement 101 tells us standardize and you can be more effective. You know, if you went to the store and you saw a sign that said, we take marks and yen and pigs and et cetera, would you ever get on that line?
Just the pig line.
Because but you know
why
what I'm
not?
Saying?
Because that sounds like fun, doesn't it? Well, you see the little squirrel. I know. All right,
but
we move
you know
on.
What I'm saying? But you wouldn't get on that line because you'd know that's going to take a lot longer. But that's exactly how it works in a doctor's office. Every time a patient goes in, even if they have the same insurance carrier, there's a likelihood that they have one of 35 plans that company offers. So what's covered prescription-wise is different. How it's covered is different. The rules that you have to do to get approval before that service is given. And so it makes for a very complex enterprise in a doctor's office. And it's very difficult to build a better mousetrap to innovate when the rules are changing all the time. And so that's one of the things that we're trying to do, is by giving them the standard plan, they can start to build a better mousetrap.
We're talking with Nancy Morris. She is the Communications and Member Relations Director for the Maine Health Management Coalition. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Nancy Morris. She's the Communications and Member Relations Director at the Maine Health Management Coalition. It's a lot of words, but a lot of great stuff. All right? And so that's what we're doing today. We're talking about high-deductible health plans, the good, the bad, and the alternative. We've talked quite a bit during the first half of the show having to do with all the different things that are happening on the federal and state level. Let's talk a little bit now about the coalition's new hybrid plan. You mentioned in the first and second segments. Tell me about it. Tell me about the reason for it, tell me about how it's coming together, and then let's talk about the plan itself.
Okay. Most people know about high deductible plans, and again, the data is starting to come in that says that they can be effective in reducing healthcare costs. But there's also another school of thought, and that is that we should encourage people to get high-value services, because having those high-value services can prevent a significant event later on down the line. An example of that would be having a man screened for colon cancer at age 60. If we find colon cancer early, our chances, that is like a home run in the bottom of the ninth at the last game of the World Series. It is a home run, extraordinaire, and it could extend that person's life. It could save an enormous amount of money, but we know only a third of people go in and get what's normally offered for them which is a colonoscopy. And there's, you can understand if you've ever been through one, why
I'm
some
50.
People.
I'm 50. Yes, I understand why.
But what most people don't know is that there are several other ways to do screening for colon cancer. And so under our program, not only are we paying for those other ways, but we are setting it up so the doctors make sure patients know the pros and cons of all the ways to screen for colon cancer. They are very close in efficacy. On the one end of the spectrum, the test costs $15. On the other end of the spectrum, the test costs $1,500. And so if patients knew that, man, I could do a test at home and get screened for colon cancer, I might do that instead. And then we'd get more people screened. We have changed up the benefit design in this program to say if that test comes back positive, then you are automatically covered for a colonoscopy too. And if the colonoscopy finds polyps, you're automatically covered for that polyp removal. And you're put in the system to say that in 5 years from now, you're automatically covered for another colonoscopy because you are at risk. And so we are trying to make sure that the benefits make sense for the doctor, make sense for the patient. And in that instance, it might not sound like it made sense for the doctor, but could you imagine if you suggested to a person to take the $15 test now and it came back positive? The way health coverage works now is you've just used your colon cancer screening benefit. So the doctors are not going to suggest you looking at a $15 test because they know that if that comes back positive, this next test is going to be required, so they're going to go right to the very expensive test so that they don't have to worry about you coming back later and being disappointed. So if we can make it make more sense for the patients and for the doctors and align, you know, where their vantage points and what's going to get in the way, and then we can do a better job of delivering benefits. So what we're trying to do is say, let's make sure that those services that have a high return on investment in either outcomes or preventing more expensive services are covered generously. Let's make sure when patients have several options, they're told those options and they get to pick the one that works best for them. And then where there's the least amount of evidence, and that is, by the way, about 60% of services, that's where the high deductible plan deductible comes in. And then patients will be told at the time of service both the efficacy and the actual cost to them of the service. And then they can have a discussion with their doctor as to whether or not that makes sense for them or not, or what else they might do, or what's an appropriate time to wait to see if you really need it.
So it does allow employee or the patient that's going in to make a decision and choose which one. Does the plan at any point, or as it's being designed, mandate what they have to do?
Not at this point, although we have three committees who are working on this, and we have five segments of this plan. And one of the segments came about because we realized, okay, the benefits are one thing, and how they're covered and what's provided is one part of a benefit plan. But who provides those services are equally important. And studies have shown that patients who are chronically ill only get the care that experts recommend half of the time. So their employer may be paying for a visit, but it doesn't mean they're getting the care that the experts recommend and what we know is likely to increase that patient's outcome. So the plan says, okay, it's not just the benefits, it's who provides those services. Then we realized we had to change up how we paid for services, because if the doctor doesn't have time to sit down with you and discuss the options that you have available to you, it's not going to work. And if they're not reimbursed on your outcome and they don't get to share in the savings of them spending more time with you, they're not going to do it. So we realized we have to change up the way the doctors get paid. And then we thought, okay, so we got the benefits right. We're getting people to high-quality doctors. The doctors have time to spend with them. And half of the patients who are going into the doctor have a chronic illness. And that means that they have a lot of self-management that they have to do. So what is going on inside the community to support that? And so we put together a wellness committee, and that wellness committee is saying, what are the benefits that we have to encourage people to partake in? Those screening services we know can have such strong effect on a patient. And what do we need to do to make sure that the community supports the patient doing the right thing? And then underneath all of this, we said, gee, if we make this administratively complex, no doctor is going to want to have a part of it. No employee is going to want to have a part of it. And that's where we're working to streamline the administration and you know, come up with a single way of doing, you know, of not the price. You know, everybody can still negotiate different prices, but what's a single way of, you know, interpreting that benefit? What's a single way of administering that benefit? Can we do things together? Can the health plans do things together instead of all doing it over and over again? And that's some of the things that we're working on.
So two quick questions. One being people that want second opinions. Is that being built into the plan? Because the reality is, and the data does show, that a second opinion can make all the difference sometimes.
You know, the truth is we've started the process. We're going over every single service that's covered under a health plan. And I don't know if you've ever seen a CPT code book, but it's about...
It's about 19 inches high.
For those people who can't see, it's about the... You know, it's several...
Phone books.
Phone books stacked together.
For those who don't know what a phone book is.
Yeah, really.
Right,
because
they don't make
them
anymore, right?
You're right. Okay, it's several laptops stacked on top of each other. So... So we're going all over all the codes. We haven't gotten up to that point yet, but those are all the discussions that we have. And what is so amazing is by having so many different vantage points in the room. So we have doctors that are participating in this who are practicing clinicians. We have the medical directors from the health plans. We have brokers. We have people who are coming from outside of the state of Maine to participate in this program because they're so excited about what we're doing. And so we're going through each and everything and saying, okay, what does the evidence say? How's the smartest way to do that? And we haven't gotten to second opinions yet, but I'll make sure we do.
You know, it's just a legitimate question.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the other things you hear sometimes from people, and I'm sure this is across the country, but we'll talk about Maine, is that they like their doctor and they want their doctor. They don't want somebody else. They want their doctor. And who that doctor recommends is the person who's going to do it. Now, it might be here in Maine. They might go, we want a second opinion down in Boston. We want to go to New York. We want to do other things. Is that still going to be something that would be considered reasonable in terms of the plan? Because there are times when it's certainly appropriate.
I think we will definitely look at that. And there are definitely places called centers of excellence where they definitely have a strong track record of doing things. There are certainly things that aren't done in Maine that need to be done in other places. But you might be surprised to know that Maine has, according to the federal government, some of the most high-quality services in America, which probably for everybody who's received them might be a little distressing. But the truth is we are ranked in the top three in the country by the federal government. And there's a group called LeapFrog, and we have more A-rated hospitals for safety than anywhere else in the country. So we actually are leaders in quality delivery, but we still have a long way to go.
No, but it's actually true. It's just the patient decision, right, to try to see what they get told, and doctors do have a little bit of responsibility in terms of that, because who they recommend and what they say when a patient is vulnerable, if somebody has cancer, if somebody has a real chronic disease, they're going to have weight in terms of what that patient believes and what they think. So I think that's an interesting element. And how do you... You talk about the drug being recommended by the doctor, that they're going to take that drug because that's the recommended. And not always do you ask if there's another option. Well, it's no different for a specialist.
Right.
Typically, they're going to recommend a specialist. Unfortunately, today, typically, they recommend only within their little universe, right? Because the hospital systems, you have to recommend within that. Then you might go outside. It's just a challenge in terms of...
Well, you might be interested to know is that in an effort for the federal government to increase the use of electronic medical records, which are considered to be a safety feature for patients, one of the things that they're doing in the third generation of the regulations is requiring the doctors to start to have standards for recommending clinicians. So they have to start making recommendations of doctors who they are known to provide high-quality services. And so that's another piece of this program is transparency on cost and transparency on quality. And it, you know, you wouldn't dream, maybe you would, but I wouldn't dream of buying a big appliance without checking with Consumer Reports first and see what the information on Consumer Reports says. And so that's what we want patients to be able to have. Here's information about the quality of that doctor. Here's what patients say about that doctor. And we publish that kind of information right now on our website, getbettermaine.org. So patients can see, does this doctor provide the care experts recommend? Do they have tools to deliver the care safely? What do other patients, what do their patients say about that doctor? And so Those are, and then the cost is the what we think are four major elements that patients deserve to know. And the more that they start to understand that quality varies and it really matters, they start to rethink about who is providing those services.
We're talking with Nancy Morris. She is the Communications and Membership Relations Director for the Maine Health Management Coalition. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. A News Talk, WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB and presented by CMAcareer.com. Today we're talking with Nancy Morris, and we're talking about health care, high deductible plans, the good, the bad, and the alternative. Nancy, we talked a little bit about the alternative plan that the coalition has put together. You have a quick story about a gentleman who came to speak to your organization. Provide that story, if you would.
Well, this gentleman is a scientist. He is the gentleman who actually put together the science called genome science, and he is the reason why we see such better outcomes in cancer. He made those breakthroughs. And he came to talk to our organization because he has a not-for-profit that's looking all around the world for ways to provide care to more people at lower costs so everyone can afford to get health services. And he told us that there are so many amazing things down the pipeline that we could give a soldier who came back from Iraq a suit now that would make his body work again. And that's actually the old technology, and they can fix it in their brain now so that his body can work the way it did again. And he said that those things aren't coming forth because we're wasting so much money in the American healthcare system. We pay twice as much as anywhere else. Our employers and our employees spend 63% more on health coverage than anywhere else in the industrialized world. And if we could start to take out the waste in our healthcare system, we could start to have some miracles, I think, available to us. And for anybody who has a loved one who's suffering from something that seems like there's no hope, there may be hope out there, but it's just not coming to the market because we can't afford to put anything more on the plate.
So, Nancy, tell me a little bit about your background. Well, you know, you've been there for a little while. Tell me a little about your background and how it relates to this whole field.
Well, I actually started my career as a reporter for NBC. There, I met somebody who asked me to start a singing telegram company. So I said, well, I'm not going to be a reporter anymore. I'll never get to do the singing telegrams. And so I started the singing telegram company, and then I started to learn about business. And I thought, I kind of like that. But I also had this social bent. And so I was one of the first people to start HMOs around the country, and I believed in them, and then they started to change a lot, and I got out of that, and I started to work with providers to help them improve their quality, and now I work for the Health Management Coalition, bringing all those parties together. And so I am not a healthcare economist. I'm just somebody who's been around the healthcare field long enough to see where problems exist, and I simply read the Institute of Medicine's report called The Healthcare Imperative, and it outlines exactly what we need to do to lower healthcare costs, and we're pretty much following that.
So listeners can go to mehmc.org, correct? That's their website. What are they going to find there?
They will find information about operations in the Maine Health Management Coalition, what we're working on, about how we're involved in the SIM grant, how they could get involved with the coalition. But we also have another website, and that website's called GetBetterMaine.org. And there, patients can find information about how well their doctors and hospitals perform. And it's a free service. There's also many resources. And everything that's on that website are free resources. So we never put up anything where anybody has to pay. But there's a fair amount of services that patients could use to help them better manage their chronic illnesses that are listed on that website.
No, that's great. We're going to link both of those at hrpowerhour.com right after this show, where they can find your information, your contact information. Obviously, they can listen to the show again if they want to link on and listen more about what we've talked about today. Nancy, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate all the information you've provided. I think it's very valuable. I think it's stuff that, you know, people don't think about all the time, but it is stuff that absolutely has to be looked at in terms of long-term care in this country.
Well, thank you for your time.
And now your HR tip of the week. According to TrendHR.com, we all know what COBRA is. That's the Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act, which was implemented in an amendment to the ERISA, the Employment Retirement Income Security Act, of 1974. In most circumstances, COBRA entitles workers and other covered individuals to the option of continuing to receive their employer-sponsored group health insurance coverage for a limited time after that coverage would otherwise end. So when does it apply? In general, COBRA applies when several conditions are met. First, the employer must be covered by COBRA. COBRA covers private employers with 20 or more employees that offer group health insurance benefits. Two, something must occur that would otherwise terminate health insurance coverage. This is sometimes referred to as a qualifying event. Or three, the person in question must be qualified under COBRA as well. Typically, this means that the individual must be a covered employee, spouse, or dependent of that employee who is a beneficiary of the employee's insurance benefits. If you're covered, then you get COBRA. And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, Charles Collins, Executive Director for the Southern Maine campus of Husson University, will be talking about adult and professional development tools. Did you know that a university still provides value? Did you know that there are ways that you can take experience that you've used and turn it into actual credits? He's going to talk about that and more on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.